surrounded, ensconced, connected with light. And yesterday I got some feedback on rereading, and it's interesting how in order to build the brain cells, sometimes things need to be reinforced. And some of what I read, Ginny was saying that today is, what, Ginny, day 41?
41, and Peter is with us now.
Oh, okay, well then let's hold that thought and see what Peter has to share. Hey, sir, how do you be? Welcome.
Michael.
Hey, loud and clear, gotcha.
Okay, good. Yes, again, thank you for your work. I'm reading your Kapoor Codex, the Enlightenment book. I find that to be, well, enlightening. I did want
to
share...
Go back to that section... If you go back to that section on the eye is the lamp of the soul, that is perception, when it is filled with light, is the guide for our earthly lives. That's the whole idea of enlightenment, is to bring perception into alignment so that instead of bringing darkness to our experiences, past unresolved issues, we bring only light to our experiences through perception, and that becomes the springboard into experiencing our human lives as it's designed to be experienced, and experiencing the actuality of the creation rather than just our perceptions about it.
I believe
so. Delighted that it's impacting you.
I just wish it would happen in less than 24 hours, maybe it can.
Oh yeah, like if we just had a pill, hey, right? Yeah, that would be it.
No, I'd like to hear story that might help audience, but really it's a question within myself for you. So the brief side of it is my ex-wife died, not the mother of my daughter, and my daughter hid all the truth from me. Because the ex-wife requested that, I don't know, because she always would say things like, you're on that boat, I live on a boat, you're going to die, you're going to do this, make sure you leave me that painting from Italy. Just weird things. Anyway, she died first, and she had issues, but don't we all? So when I confronted my daughter on, I'm your father, I need to know the truth, and there's even legal avenues here that have to be pursued because our pensions are tied together with the federal government. She gets part of mine, I get part of it. I have to know these things. Otherwise, I could be accused of fraud and with the U.S. government. And my daughter has a history of explosive cussing behavior. She will just lash out irrationally, so to speak, and whether it's a text or a voice, and a lot of cuss words, which I'm not going to say on your beautiful show, but
good.
So I started researching on YouTube, are other people going through this? And there's millions of fathers that with generation millennial, generation Z, due to indoctrination in the colleges and even high school, a lot of young females believe that their fathers are useless and stupid, and they have the right to disrespect them and cut them out. So in her last text, she's a lawyer now, of course, I paid for a lot of this college. And I was very nurturing, and I was a good dad.
So, let me throw a thought in. Let me throw a thought in here. And remember that there are two places we can live. One is the place of responsibility and ownership of what's happening in our lives. And the other is, as members of the one world universal religion of blame, where it's somebody else's fault. And my offering is that the child's set for life, the child's mindset for life, comes in the first 5 years of their lives. It isn't done by a college or a government or a, you know, there are occasions where a brainwash, an actual cult can be engaged and do that. But the set for that mind has to come in those very earliest years.
Okay, that's enlightening. Because I divorced her mother, who gave birth to her, who I'm not going to go into that scenario, but I was only married 5 years. I divorced the mother when that my daughter was three.
Right.
So
that would create some pretty severe impacts on a girl of three who's just developing relationship with dad, and the trauma of that would definitely create a mindset that without forgiveness would be pretty tough for any person to work through, male or female.
Well, now I'm blaming myself.
Well, okay, great. So there's your next worksheet. So now remember that if you're a member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame, and it doesn't work to blame everybody else, then the next object of attention is blaming self. And that's a power person dynamic. Now, that might be a place to dig out the power person worksheet and look at how your power person, you know, how did it feel when your power person blamed you? And notice that you're a good stand-in for them. And that's all the stuff that needs to be forgiven. So, the power person power person dynamic. Three things occur, and it's usually an interaction between a parent and a child. Always. It can be any interaction where these three dynamics that I'm going to describe occur. I remember working with a man a few years ago. He had been in a store that was being robbed, and one of the robbers held a gun to his head, and power person dynamic, bang, was just right there. This guy was in his 70s. So it isn't necessary, but usually it's between a parent and a child. And three things occur in the child's life for that power person dynamic to be literally an energy pattern installed in the mind. One, the power person has more power over the child than the child does. Two, the power person is not functioning as a human being, is not functioning as love. And three, the child perceives the circumstance as survival. When those three things occur in the child's life or anyone's life, literally, when you think of a body-mind unit being an energy device, the veil opens, the barrier opens, this energy field is now a wide-open, absorbing sponge, and every energy in the environment, whether the energy is spoken or not, doesn't matter. The person, the power person who's enraged that never says a word, the child in this state is still living on the plane of vibration, absorbs all of that rage. That dynamic, having been installed in that child's mind, will control that person's behavior for the rest of their lives. And there will only be three behaviors possible for that person for the rest of their lives until they confront and uninstall, remove, or forgive this dynamic. And the three behaviors depend which behavior is active. There's a thing in the mind we call the automatic decision system. And the level of stress one is under determines which behavior is brought into activity. When there's little or no stress, and I'll just invite everybody who's listening to think about your life, when there's little or no stress, what the automatic decision kicks people into is doing whatever it is that they did to get along with their power person.
Mm.
When stress starts to build, the automatic decision system kicks into another gear, and now this person does whatever it is they did to resist and survive with their power person. So, let's say the child is Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. Nice kid, you know, they grow up, everybody, nice guy, nice gal, wonderful, great person. And so, in their normal, you know, everyday life, when stress is low, they're Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. you meet this Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy or Nice Gal, whether you're the you know, the guy or the gal in the relationship, and you've been together for, you know, years maybe, and you've never seen them under the next level of stress. The next level of stress, all of a sudden, and this often happens, say, for instance, when a child comes along in a marriage, there's a whole other level of stress. Nothing bad about that. Stress is a wonderful thing. You just have to know how it's created and how to manage it properly so that it supports life function. But what happens in a relationship is now that the next level of stress is reached, now this person is behaving according to what they did to resist and survive with their power person. So now maybe instead of Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy, it's Mr. or Ms. Snarky. And person in relationship with them turns around and goes, wait a minute, we've been together for 3 years. What the hell happened to you? You're Ms. Nice Guy. What happened? Stress is up. All of a sudden, they're now doing the behaviors they did to resist and survive with the power person. Mr. Ms. Snarky. It's like, I never saw this snarky. Why has your personality changed? And then, when the next level of stress occurs, which usually follows shortly after that conversation we just had, the automatic decision system kicks into the third level of stress, when one is ultra-stressed, and that person now will do whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. And they'll say the honeymoon is over.
Well, that's exactly what happened with my daughter.
It runs the world. Yeah.
And notice that
under the stress of goals not being met with your daughter, and I offer that we can't blame the school or anybody else, that, and so my question would be, and this would be another piece, your next piece of work would be, how did it feel? Because you automatically went into, with the stress of that, you automatically went into self-blame. So how did it feel when your power person blamed you?
Well,
that would be your next level of power person behavior, probably.
So just to understand my daughter, when things are going smooth, it's, oh, Dad, I love you, and
yep.
nicey-nice, and then the one level of stress, and the day that, well, she said, you can't come to my wedding. I don't want to see you ever again. That just occurred. And she was on the day of moving from one house. She bought a house with her.
Yeah. A lot of stress. Yeah. Yeah, you're moving. Major. That, like, that elevates stress immeasurably for people.
Yes. So she went through that pattern, and she wanted to never see me again because that was activated from when she was 3 years old, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, suppose. And by the way, there are two different ways to take on a power person dynamic. One of them is actively, and one of them is passively. And the kind of description or situation you described, it was likely a passive thing for her. She's 3 years old. She doesn't know what the heck is going on. She just knows her life is falling apart and her daddy's not available. So that could oftentimes lead to a passive thought disorder, power person thought disorder of, my father doesn't want me or doesn't want to see me or won't have anything to do. Whatever that thought disorder was, that would be what would tend to happen there. Or the other side is active. That actually says, I don't ever want to see you again. So the thought disorder behind that power person dynamic can be active or passive.
Okay. In this case, I think passive.
And often, they're generational. The thought disorder that I got from my power person, if I never work through it, I will tend to pass it on to my children. Who will tend to? And literally, I mean, if you look around the world, I don't care whether it's, you know, presidents or governments or churches or power person dynamics running the game. You know, this church talks about love and Christ and Jesus and then stands up there and rails with the threats of the fires of hell. And what you got? You got a power person dynamic going on. You don't have somebody who's quoting the man named Yeshua who says, oh, my, our Father, whose good pleasure it is to give us the kingdom. Under stress, that's not what that preacher's saying. they're playing out the power person dynamic that they haven't resolved in their own lives. And the best, and then when that happens, that will tend to resonate certain goals in my mind if I'm the person sitting in front of them. And those goals in my mind will tend to elevate my stress. And if I don't know that I'm under stress, then I'll tend to play out my power person dynamic against their power person dynamic. And that just leads to crazy time.
You know,
somebody has to arrive at the place where rather than functioning out of a power person dynamic, they actually function out of their human lives. And no matter what's happening in the environment, because they've cleaned up the causes of stress in their own minds, they simply stand as a human being, as the active presence of love. And that's where the real work begins. Who can do that?
And her mother, my daughter's mother, her mother, so it would be my daughter's grandmother, they died not talking for 2 years. They went through the battles of, I've had enough of you, I won't talk to you.
So the beat goes on. That tends to be generational. You go to the scriptures, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. The sins of the fathers, the energies that are off the mark, will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations of those who, the quote says, of those who hate me. So here's the Creator speaking to humans saying, hey buddy, you know what? If you don't open and connect with the active presence of love, which is me, then the only advisor you've got is what's happened in your, is happening in your genes. And guess what? You're just going to play out the advice given by your genes. So that passage where it says it passed on to 3 and 4 generations, yea, of those who hate me, that word hate there in Aramaic is not hate as in a love-hate relationship. It's those who are separated from the active presence of love. They're stuck with the only advisor they got, the genes. And that means the crazy time of the generations is going to run the show. Now somebody wakes up.
So,
and cleans up the genes.
What do I do right now? What do I do today? I don't mean calling and trying to fix things. I mean, what is your advice?
So my input, the first thing I would suggest you do, you know, you've started to do the codependence intensive. I don't know how far you are through it, if you've gotten to the codependence review and the pseudo solutions, but you might go back and redo that or just step into that. Dig out the power person worksheet and maybe take that one piece that came up a few minutes ago of, okay, so if I can't blame that out there, then I'm to blame. Then I'd do a power person worksheet on blaming.
Is that a different
I did some forgiveness work around, pardon me?
Is that a different
work? Yeah, in the intensive, have you not gotten to the power person worksheet yet? It's toward the end, so you might not have completed that far yet.
No, I did
the
normal.
It's the 14-page worksheet.
Oh. Okay. No, I did definitely.
And that's the one that really unravels the mind. So some worksheets around that, and then, you know, I don't know if you've done the communication aspect of it, but you might look at the responsibility communication tool in the videos, go through that, and initiate or start to work on a responsibility communication letter using those responsibility communication tools to communicate with your daughter. And so you might start and do that in writing to start with. And if you want to, send me a copy of whatever you write, I'll be glad to feedback where there might still be some projection or there might be some pointers to some work that needs to be done before you send it. And it is one of the most powerful tools, you know, in terms of practical use over the last, you know, I've been doing the communication, did you hear what I think I said, workshop for about 32 or 33 years. And over the years, it is one of the most power, it creates one of the most powerful healing spaces of any of the tools.
Mm-hmm.
when it comes to an interaction with another person.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Rice. I have my work to do, and you described it, and thank you for that, and I'll give somebody else time.
How are you doing? What's happening with your breaths right now?
I stopped breathing.
So one of the first things I'll invite you to do is just to tap in and be present with your breath and watch where in your body you are robbing it of breath. Because we rob the body of breath in the places where we store the energetic patterns we don't want to deal with.
It's literally
the way what the ancients called the veil of the temple. And they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. It's built by holding the breath. It's opened by restoring the breath. So it's perfect that you texted me that you're planning to do the still point breathing this weekend, because that will be a perfect place to open some space in yourself. I'd put that together with the responsibility communication, forgiveness tool, and the power person dynamic.
Okay.
And breathe and just watch. I mean, literally, if you think of, you know, your computer, you know, maybe you've got three different hard drives in your computer, and you store these files on this drive, and you store those files on those. And like, I know I've got one computer that I keep all of my programs on, and that's the only thing stored on that one. And then I have a separate drive for my data. So if you think of your body, you watch the average person when they're starting to deal with and starting to speak about their trauma, and they're in the middle of a thought, and I'll say, well, what's happening with your breath? They'll say, well, I was holding and I was thinking. And my best understanding of that is I have a part of my hard drive from the neck up where all the information that I've already acknowledged is safe is stored. And everything that's not safe for me to look at is stored from the neck down. So when I'm in a situation where something's resonating, that which is not safe for me to look at directly is only safe to me to look at when I'm projecting it into my brain's perception of others, then I hold my breath, and I'm searching in the safe part of the database from the neck up, shutting down everything in the dissociated part of the database that I and my generations haven't dealt with. When I begin to consciously, purposely restore my breath to those places that I've shut down, then I can start to access those things which I and maybe nobody in 20 generations have looked at or dealt with consciously. And I get to clean them up. And that's why there's no magic pill, and that's why it's not going to happen yesterday. Oh, I'll be finished this in a week. No, you won't. Oh, well, a year, right? No. 5? Nah. 10? No. Mm-hmm. I'll offer from where I sit, Peter. You know, I've been developing this work for better than a half a century now. And some of the most important and the deepest work that I've done personally in terms of my own personal process has happened in the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm. Yeah, I've known you
don't.
33 years.
Yeah.
So, wow.
You don't end these generational patterns in one sitting. Now, of course, the more willing one is, that's an accelerator of the energy. You know, if you go back into the Aramaic, when they talked about people who don't want to deal with things, they would describe that person as being trapped in Satan. Satan not being some dude with a red suit, a tail, and a pitchfork, but in Aramaic, Satan means the resistor, one who misleads. And you talk to the average person about how they're responsible for this conflict or that in their lives, and what will they do? They'll hold their breath, and they'll say, no, wait a minute, you don't understand, not me. There's the resistor. And now they've got a whole story about whoever they're blaming for it. the whole definition of Satan is right there, and it revolves around cutting oneself off from the breath. Now, if you go back to the Aramaic, where it speaks about the creation story, and we're told by the Greeks that God sent out some kind of a spirit or something, but actually in Aramaic, what it says is the Creator gave us his breath. And when we cut ourselves off from it, we're disempowered. And we're shutting down the part of our structure in which our diseases are stored. And that's why we die. Because all death is suicide. And these patterns have been going on for generation upon generation. You know, you look at that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. What had to happen for them to get out? Said the old generation had to die off. Not everybody in old physical bodies. The root word generation is genare. It means cause. All of the causes held in the mind and the genes that have been unresolved by exposure to love throughout all the generations. If we're the early adopter in the family system, we take on the role of working through it. And that's the work of Yeshua. That's why in one particular case where the disciples, a larger group than the 12 we normally know of, came together with Yeshua, and they asked him, what do we do? And he told them, and half of them said, that's a hard saying. Who can understand it? And they left, and they never came back.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, what he said is, you got to clean up your genes. You got to clean up your life. You can't keep living out of this state of unconsciousness. And half of them just left. And they made up a religion about Jesus saves and Jesus is going to do it for you rather than actually listening to what the man said. There's a work to be done, and he described how to do the work. The Greeks turned it all backwards. If Yeshua sat in most churches today, he'd say, that's all Greek to me.
That's funny.
I was talking to someone yesterday and talking about the Aramaic and Yeshua, and they were very, very convincing and absolute in their statement. And they said that when Jesus taught, now here's this Aramaic man in the Middle East who's teaching in small towns in the Middle East, and they said he read from the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament. That's what Yeshua was doing. He was reading from the Septuagint.
Hmm.
And it was just like, what? And what came to mind is the, and that's just a belief that a lot of the culture has, but what came to mind, have you seen the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yes.
Remember the father, everything that's new or, you know, different or meaningful, he's, the Greeks invented it, yes, the Greeks, it's like,
yeah,
Yeshua's now Greek,
yeah, and
there's just,
Windex.
Yeah, there's just so much of what he said in Aramaic that when it's translated by the Greeks, just doesn't make any sense.
Do you think that was a language issue, or do you think it was a cultural issue, or?
All of the above.
All right.
First of all, who can understand the language of up your own mind, and you've got to quit being a member of the one world universal religion of blame that has got somebody else to blame for everything that's going on inside of you? I mean, who's got a language for that?
Oh, nobody wants to do it, first of all. Maybe that's why the language didn't exist. I don't know.
That's it, exactly. Well, and if you haven't done it, I mean, let's say you go back to the Aramaic. I don't know if you were on the show when we were doing some of the introduction to the Enlightenment book, but one of the things that the scholars noted was that each one of them had to reduce the wisdom of Yeshua to their own level of understanding. And the scholars in doing this translation work admitted that. Like, we're reducing this to our level of understanding, and that's why it took a whole team of scholars of the Aramaic to move in the direction of what do these words actually mean, rather than what's my reduced understanding, what amplifiers in my brain cells.
You're talking about the Gabor codec?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why there's a team of people that did this.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And then, you know, the last 43 or so years that I've been involved directly with the Gaborists and with, the, you know, publishing the Enlightenment book, what we've done is work to understand how to bring it into practical use for someone who isn't going to spend 10 or 20 or 30 years of their lives understanding it or building the brain cells for it. So distilling it down to the tools, here's the how-to, and that's one of the main things, pieces that's missing from the Greek translations is the how-to.
Yeah. You're right, there's no how-to in the Greek New Testament. Yeah, just silent.
So there's a work to be done, and we're here to hold the space and support you in it.
Can I hire somebody else to do my work? Just kidding.
You could give it a shot, hey, you know. If you want to throw your money away, I could probably find somebody who'd be happy to do it for you. I remember one guy that wanted to become the world champion weightlifter, and he paid somebody to go into the gym every day and work out for him. And you know what? He didn't win the world championship weightlifting. Christ.
That's kind of why I made that joke.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. Well, and it's kind of like, it's kind of like the exercise room, the way that actual spiritual awareness and spiritual strength is built is by doing the work of healing. It's like going into the gym, and nobody else can go into the gym for us. And each one has to face and do their own work.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody can support us. Somebody can shortcut us with the tools, but everybody's got to ultimately do their own work.
Yeah. Well, the worksheets I have done have been great. I had another dinner with my son, which was excellent.
Sweet.
And you remember we did the worksheet, or I did the worksheet about that issue a couple months ago.
Yep.
So big work. I'm positive about that. But thank you, Michael. I'll just hang on here and listen. Maybe there's some other callers. I've invited some other people, friends of mine. One guy's name is Seamus. He's a young person I met here in San Diego, but extremely interested. And he's one of the people I'm going to give the book Enlightenment to.
Cool.
Yeah, you
know, it's in the mail. It's on its way to you.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, I'll be on the radio listening.
All right. Have a blessed one.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. And that's a great idea. What Peter did is he bought some extra books that he's handing out to some friends. So if anybody, that's a way to support us. And it also gets the work out into other people's hands. So Miss Jeannie.
You have another
hand. We have
hand
anybody up? Else in the phone queue? Awesome. Let's say hello.
Okay, it's 954. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Hello.
Hi.
Well, hey there, 954. Barry?
Yes.
Hi there, young man. How are you?
I'm happy. I'm feeling peaceful. And, I listened. I came and I listened. I wanted to joke about the fact that I wasn't going to be here. Because I had an appointment with my physiatrist today after we talked about, and I told you that I would stop by in the near future. And there's been more than one time where in my using, you know, for wisdom, a form of divination, where I was guided, you know, that I needed, you know, to have transformation, kind of like,
you know, death followed by rebirth type of experience in the recent past a couple of times. And I've been kind of doing my best to maintain the balance that I'm in living. And as I've been listening, you know, to you coach someone, of course, from San Diego with another person in San Diego, which I found amusing considering there was, you know, a little more coincidences. I don't know.
In my mind comes out, no coincidences, only God incidences.
But what I came to say and then ask is, you know, I've had kind of consistency for some time of lessons that, just as you were saying, you know, some of your deepest work was done over the last 3 years. I've just seen me grow slowly over a period of time, and to maintain some kind of healthy balance where I look at things like reflect on my own personal spiritual growth, soul evolution. In periods of my life, especially from the point where I stopped using substances to be able to control how I was feeling, and then lost control. And so that's now decades. And early, you know, from that system of wisdom, I was encouraged that I had to make what I would call spiritual awareness focus the most important thing daily in my life. And while, you know, I certainly had no choice at least this is my languaging, you know, to undo or to rebuild or to create new neural networks, connections in my brain so that something would happen and I wouldn't go to the love affair that I had with the substance and be able to, you know, and have. So the word slowly over a period of time, it was what I was trying to get out, that I'd just seen that happen. And then to find balance between in living, so that, you know, I do now little of, you know, what I studied, I'm going to say, maybe the first 20 years of my recovery, had a lot to do with integrating, the teachings that you offer to the teachings that I was learning in this other form, to all of the other schools of wisdom, you know, that I've had. In the moment, I'll focus on one thing, because it was said yesterday, and then I heard you talk about today in terms of the resistor, and I get confused about, am I resisting? Am I resisting feeling, sensing, knowing, spiritual sighting, what the good orderly direction of my understanding is saying to me? You know, yes, sir.
Remember that confusion is one of the steps in clarifying the mind. That's a step in the process. When I'm living in blocked truth, that is, my 9-bit mind, I have a picture that's not true, you're to blame for what's happening in my life. So I have a lie, I fill my 9-bit perceptual space with that lie, and I call that lie truth, and I'm in blockage of truth. When I start pouring in the frequency of truth, and the presence of love. It's going to conflict with that. And when the two energies meet, the result is going to be confusion. And that's where I want to continue to pour in truth. And if you remember back in the early days, what, 30-some years ago, when you started doing this work, I used to talk about tithing a lot, and it wasn't about money. The primary thing in tithing was you apply 2.4 hours today to your spiritual work. And over a period of time, that's when you'll get the benefits of doing your work. Where, of course, the ego wants its instant gratification. And so, be patient with the confusion as it comes up, and keep pouring in truth, keep pouring in the active presence of love, and the energetic root of the confusion simply dissolves in the presence of that love and of truth.
I hear the words. It's part of the 77 times 70, clearly.
Right.
So, I came in to say hello. I came in to tune in to hear, you know, I get as much value as listening to someone else being processed or facilitated as I do sitting in the chair, so to speak. I feel love in my heart. I have good practice of not being, there was a workshop, I'm forgetting whose residence we were doing it in, sometime in the last decade. And I recall a conversation about buttons or wires or I'm forgetting the languaging that was used. I think I've done well to disconnect those things that are unlike love, the triggers, you know, and it's not just for teaching the specific, you know, methods that you provided. It's the fact that I get the sharpening of my skills on a regular basis because I continue to do and bring to the 12-step process the tools that you offered in the past. In fact, I make a difference in that arena now as a result of having that and being able to speak both languages. One of the things that's happened is that, so maybe we can process a little. So there are moments of now where I'm sitting and I believe that I'm feeling the sadness of my parents' relationship. You know, of having been, again, you mentioned the first 5 years before I went to, you know, kindergarten on my fifth birthday. Before I went to kindergarten, I was home alone with a woman who was predominantly sad because she was stuck in a relationship or perceived that she was stuck or was reliving, you know, the mores of what people did, you know, in the 1950s or 40s.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a corresponding component to my father's sadness in that he had a woman who stopped loving him probably well before I was born. And so I find myself on a daily basis multiple times during the day where I feel that sadness, and then the impulse is to go in the refrigerator and medicate myself with food. So, that being said, Do we have a mind shift or something else you want to say before the hour is up?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So here's where I go with that, Barry, is first of all, remember that the definition in this work of denial, when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. Denial means that the truth of what's going on inside of me, I have to hide from myself. And in so doing, I instruct my mind to fabricate a construct that puts the cause of what I'm experiencing outside of me. And we call that dissociation. And the picture that my mind presents, where I take my sadness and I put it into that picture of, in this case, mom or dad or both, I now take that sadness and I put it into my brain's image of them, and I see a picture of them holding sadness. So now I really believe that that projection is true, and now I've successfully put the cause of my sadness outside of me. My offering would be that you want to let go of that whole false construct. You're not sad. You're not feeling sadness because of your mom and how she was, you perceived her to be stuck in the relationship, or dad and how you perceived him to be stuck in the relationship. You're sad because there's sadness in you. There's a thought disorder that reflects his sadness. And so when you can look at the effectiveness of forgiveness is that when I can do a worksheet where mom is the object of attention, I, Barry, who am love, feel sad. My thought is that I'm sad because mom thinks she's stuck in this place, whatever it is. What's my goal for mom? I want my mom to become free, or I want my mom to be happy, or I want my mom to be, you know, sanely in love with my father. Whatever the specific goal is, the more precisely you identify the goal that you were holding in that memory with mom, then that becomes your answer number three in the worksheet. And then you're going to set love in your mind. You're going to tap into the most powerful presence of love that you can. And then you're going to cancel the goal for mom to be sanely in love with dad, which the average mind would say, well, why would I cancel that perfectly wonderful, beautiful goal? There's nothing wrong with that goal. Why would I get rid of it? And I would say, you're right. There's nothing wrong with that goal. Here's why you should get rid of it. Because when you put that goal in your mind, it resonates your thought disorders that cause your sadness. And when you cancel that goal, the construct of your mind that shows you that your sadness is about mom will collapse. And when it collapses, it will collapse into the thought disorder that's at the root of that construct in your mind. And when you bring that underlying unconscious thought disorder forward in the presence of love, by exposure, just like water evaporates when it's exposed to the sun, that thought disorder will begin to dissolve and be forgiven, be removed. And then you turn around and you do the next worksheet and the next one, which might be all of those different goals you held for mom, and then you turn to dad and the thought disorder. I, Barry, who am love, feel sad. My dad, my mom stopped loving him before I was even born. What's my goal for dad? Well, there might be 10 different ones involved in that. And each one that you cancel, remembering that the word forgive is your bag, it means to cancel. I cancel the goals, not because they're bad goals, not because there's anything wrong with them, not because I don't want them to be achieved. I do. I still want that goal to be achieved for dad. But I cancel it because I recognize that every time I load that driver into my mind, that resonates my thought disorders based in sadness, and I get to project that, and I make pictures up of dad, and that it's dad's sadness that I'm feeling. And so as you collapse each of those projections, you come into deeper and deeper contact with the underlying unconscious dynamic that's beneath the veil of your own temple, and you open the veil of your temple by canceling each specific as you can get, because the specific goal is what resonates the underlying thought disorder that's creating this projection that has me believing that I'm sad because of something that happened in my parents' life decades ago, rather than I'm sad because here I am, Barry, you know, 7 decades later, experiencing thought disorders that create sadness, and I'm still projecting them on my past. But I can bring them forward, the literal underlying thought disorders, which are oftentimes genetic, and bring them forward in the presence of love, then they dissolve, and I'm freed of it. I've ended the projection cycle.
I feel like I grabbed just a tiny bit more of the work in terms of installing it within me. So let me
see. Remember that as soon as we're finished, you can go to the our website, click on the microphone, drive down, drill down into today's show, download it, and you can listen to it as many times as you need to review and rebuild and rock it on the next level.
Oh, yeah. No, I will. Yeah, I actually thought about and forgot that it is recorded. Thank you.
And there are at least, I mean, we just reviewed the dance through the principles of the worksheet, but there are at least 20 radio shows in our archives. If you go to the special archives, when you drill down into the link that is behind the microphone on the page, there are at least 20 different radio shows where either Jeannie or myself or Dr. Jim has walked somebody through the whole worksheet process from A to Z. With as many years as you've got behind you in the work, now would probably be a wonderful time to set aside the time and listen to each of those, and each one, you know, you've got the brain cells already built. It'll tie together a whole different level of understanding of what forgiveness means and how it works.
I believe I'm ready.
Awesome.
We'll see. See, I can say I'm committing to do that, but I'm careful now to not say something that I then don't follow through on. So I'm committed to looking at this again, and to use your number when I'm stalled, when I become the resistor,
and maybe don't use the number when you're stalled. Use the number to keep you from falling into the space of stalling, that you stay engaged in the principles and the understanding and building the brain. So you make that part of your 2.4-hour tithe of time per day to your own spiritual growth. So you don't have to get to a stall place and get lost in it again, but you just maintain it. The other thing I might put out there this weekend, and we do, I don't know if you know this or not, but we do a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club via Zoom. And it's this weekend. And so, you know, if you're ready to move that on the next level, Saturday and Sunday at 11 o'clock via Zoom, we do once a month a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, where we actually, you know, have people in. You get a mind shifter, you work on it. 11 o'clock, we come together on Zoom. There's a conversation about the mind shifters, the principles, where are we going. You go through a still point breathing process. You select another mind shifter at the end of the session on Saturday. You work on it between Saturday and Sunday. Then at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, we come back together again via Zoom and do some processing around that and whatever comes next. So if that's appropriate, that might be, you know, another step to move things in the direction.
Thank you. I am committed on Saturday mornings elsewhere. Is attending just on Sunday an option?
No. No, the actual still point process happens on Saturday, and without that, Sunday wouldn't, you know.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, thank you so much for all you do and how you be. Love you. Namaste.
All right, well, lots of love and blessings. Glad to be holding the space. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please create the best year yet of your eternal life. It is an awesome gift to give the world.